Yeah, that, well, I mean, the problem with understanding the, you know, the origin of language, or hypothesizing or guessing at at the origin of language, has always been that you know, we're able to use these words that somehow everyone agrees on, and they're sort of, you know, arbitrary words, right? All these words that we're using, that I'm using right now, right? I and word and use and so on. I mean, obviously they don't have any kind of intrinsic relation to their meanings. So at some point, so everyone must have agreed that the word use means this, and the word word means this, and the word go means this, and so on. But you know, the problem here is that the way in which we could formulate such an agreement would be in language itself, right? So there's no, so you kind of, anytime you think about how to kind of agree on the meaning of words and establish some kind of some set of words, you need, you know, some other prior set of words to, you know, to already be talking about. So you have this kind of infinite regress, and you can't get past it. And this, I mean, this goes back a long way. I mean, I know Rousseau already pointed out this problem, and I assumed that, so right away, that's, you know, that's the 18th century. And in the 19th century, there was kind of a consensus, in at least in France, but I think elsewhere as well, because, you know, I don't think you see much of it, to basically give up on trying to figure out what the origin of language is. And I assume this is what Levi-Strauss had in mind when he said that language had to have emerged all at once, or not at all, right? It couldn't have been a kind of gradual emergence. But of course, he didn't have a solution for that. He's just posing that is a problem that he would seem to think can't be solved. So this is, if we're gonna talk about the origin of language, that's really the problem that we have to solve. How would the, you know, how would this agreement come without the means that we already have for establishing an agreement? And so the way in which the originary hypothesis solves this problem is by looking at, you would need a situation where there would be a sign that would be that would be agreed upon in the event itself, and the event itself would be memorable and repeatable, so that that sign would itself be memorable and repeatable. And you know, thinking in terms of mimesis is the best way in here, because mimesis already includes or implies something that we could consider a sort of agreement, right? It's a kind of tacit agreement that we're doing the same thing, that we want the same thing, right? So in a certain sense, you know, that helps to think about language as bringing a kind of tacit agreement that's already implicit in an increasingly mimetic animal, right? These advanced, you know, pre-humans, hominids, whatever we want to call them. Right, so there's already kind of the emergence of this sort of tacit agreement, and so the question then can be shifted to what would make this disagreement explicit, right? Well, then it has to be something that, in some way, that they would have to be able to show each other that they realize that they're imitating each other, right? So that have to be, you know, something that makes this, again, tacit agreement available to both of them. They both be able to see that the other sees this, right? That they realize that they want the same thing, and they want the same thing because they're imitating each other and they're heading towards the same thing. So, you know, the way to really solve it is, you know, you can't get at it if you're caught up in the assumption that you would inherit in thinking about the problem, that science is inherently a matter of deriving laws of nature, or laws of society, or whatever, that are repeatable, and that just kind of refer to a process, right? So you get stuck on that. If you have to think about, you know, a kind of, you know, recurring, implicitly an eternal set of laws or relations, then you can never really get at you know, how something like this would happen. You can't figure out how society would happen, for that matter, right? So unless you shift from that and think in terms of an event, a unique event, then you're not going to get there. And here, the originary hypothesis does is it draws on the, in a sense, the despised other of modern social science, which is revelation, right? The notion that you know, that truth is kind of revealed in an event, in a singular event, a unique event that in a sense you just witness to, and others kind of in a sense witness to your witnessing, and there's a kind of chain of transmission of witnessing of this event, which then generates other unique events. Unless you kind of shift to this way of thinking about the emergence of human beings, of social orders and language and so on, you're not going to solve this problem of how, say, a tacit agreement, or what we could call a tacit agreement, would have been made explicit, right? So then you have to start thinking how, you know, what kind of scene do we have in mind? Okay, so it's mimesis, right? And already we have, you know, Girard here pointing to the fact that mimesis creates rivalry and creates conflict, right? Okay, so meaning can't really come out of conflict and crisis and violence itself, right? Because in a sense, all of that is the negation of meaning, right? Everyone, when everyone's engaging in mimetic conflict, there can't really be any revelation just from that, because everyone's concealing from themselves what's really going on, right? It's, you know, there's no way of admitting to yourself when you're in the midst of a mimetic conflict that that's really what you're in the midst of, right? You can't recognize that. For you, it has to be, yes, that object really is uniquely valuable. This person really is evil for getting in my way and not letting me get it. You have to believe that. The very fact that you're in a conflict means you have to believe that, which means that you're essentially in a mystified condition, and nothing can get revealed to you in a mystified condition. So that has to be, that mystified condition has to be dispelled in order for some kind of revelation to come. So what's the revelation going to be? Well, it's going to be a revelation precisely of the mystification that's caused by this mimetic conflict and crisis, right? And when everybody sees themselves, and at one point, I forget where, maybe it's in Originary Thinking, Gans refers to a fearful symmetry, which is a phrase he's taken from the literary critic Northrop Frye, where everybody sees themselves kind of, in a sense, arrayed against each other on the scene. And then in a certain sense, everyone sees, well, you know, what I'm doing, it's exactly the same thing with what that guy over there is doing. And it's exactly the same things that guy over there is doing. And then, in a sense, that stops everybody, right? Because you can't continue sort of thoughtlessly, mindlessly heading towards the object when you see that everybody else is doing it. And the fact that, you know, you see, you know, that they're doing it thoughtlessly and mindlessly, so you are as well, right? So this, you know, so your condition gets revealed to you in all of the others. And so everybody showing each other that they understand this, which again is a kind of anachronistic way of putting it. Understand is sort of a, you know, a word that, you know, that really is best applied to, you know, reading and interpretation of texts and so on. But any word that we use to apply to the originary scene is going to be a bit anachronistic, right? So it's displaying to each other that each sees the other as the other sees, you know, each one, right? In other words, this making the symmetry visible to everyone, and making the visibility visible to everyone. This is where we can find the origin of language, right? This is where we can find this agreement without a prior agreement coming into being, right? And if we think about it as a tacit agreement that's made explicit by everybody seeing in real time the consequences of that agreement, then it becomes something new. And then that becomes a sign, and then that becomes an event, and that becomes an event that can be repeated, right? You can do the sign over and over again, right? And you can turn it into a ritual. You can kind of imitate that scene. Everybody can come back to that same place, right? With a similar animal and, you know, put forward the same gesture, and you can keep building on that. So this is how we can in fact solve this problem, right? That seems impossible of an agreement without the means of coming to an agreement.